welcome to TDF Talks, a fortnightly podcast from The Design Files, Australia's most popular design blog. I'm Lucy Fagans, and I'm usually your host, but today we're doing something a little bit different. By popular request, today we're featuring a very special guest, me. That's right. Today, for our final episode of the year, I'll be handing over to our managing editor, Elle Murrell, for a chat with yours truly. And I can promise, hand on my heart, that she wouldn't let me see any of the questions in advance, so we'll see how we go. So I'll hand over to Elle now and catch you on the other side of the microphone in just a minute.
Lucy Fagans has played an unparalleled role in shaping the contemporary Australian design landscape. Lucy studied creative arts at the University of Melbourne. In a former life, she worked as a set dresser in the film industry and as a stylist before launching The Design Files in early 2008. As founder and editor, she's penned countless articles that introduce and champion local creatives, as well as art-directed and styled more shoots and short films than you'd think humanly possible. The trailblazer behind TDF's real-world events, from Open House to TDF Collect, speaker series, workshops and demonstrations, this working mum is one multi-talented woman. Outside of the TDF universe, Lucy pens a weekly column in Domain magazine, featured in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, and has contributed to titles including Inside Out and The Saturday Paper. Last year, Fairfax named her one of Melbourne's most influential women under 40. Aside from all of that, for us at TDF, Lucy is a brilliant boss, down-to-earth role model, and a cherished friend. Usually the host of this fortnightly podcast, we thought it was only fitting that we close out the season with Lucy in the TDF Talks hot seat. Here I am at our daily hangout, the Design Files HQ, in Collingwood, Melbourne, with the one and only Lucy Fagans. Founder and editor of The Design Files. One thing you might not all know about Lucy is that she was born in London and moved to Melbourne at age 13. How did you find being an immigrant in Melbourne, Luce?
Oh, God. It's so funny, isn't it? The word immigrant has such interesting connotations these days. When I moved here, I moved with my family. And you know, when you're a child, you just kind of don't have a full sense for what's really going on and you're not responsible for anything. So you kind of just latch on to friends and school. And I think I wasn't really that aware of how big a deal it was to move countries really at that age. And we did have a connection to Melbourne because my mum's Australian, but my dad's British. So it's kind of like just one big adventure at the time.
And so you went to high school here and you often joke about being nerdy and quite straight-laced in school. What were you drawn to at school and how did that influence what you went on to study?
Yes, I was very nerdy at school. I really was the good girl that all the parents wanted to be at the party to make sure that everyone behaved themselves at the party, if you know what I mean.
But you still went to the party.
I did go to the party, but then I made sure everyone got in a taxi at the end and, you know, made sure everything was tidy or something. But yeah, no, I was a bit of a nerd at school. I was really focused on my studies and really focused on getting good grades and all that boring stuff. And I guess I'm not too different to that now. So yeah, I loved English and at high school, I really excelled at all the writing stuff, the creative writing, which I guess looking back kind of makes sense. I did love art as well, but to be honest, I wasn't that good at it. Like I loved it and I loved the visual subjects, but I think I excelled more in writing. So yeah, that was a prophecy, I guess, for my future.
Yeah. And then following high school?
So I finished high school and I went to uni and I took a course called Creative Arts, which doesn't exist anymore, sadly. Interestingly, a bunch of really cool Creative Melbourne people did that course, like Penny Modra from The Good Copy did that course, Claire Bowditch did that course. So there's quite a few interesting people out there that did it, but it was a very broad creative degree with a focus both on practical creative stuff, like art and filmmaking and photography, but also theory, so art history and film theory and stuff like that. So I did this very interesting, fun, creative course. It had really no vocational outcomes. And while I was there, I really got interested in the filmmaking component. I kind of went there to do the art and the creative writing. And then when I got there, the film department was really exciting and interesting. And I started taking film subjects. And that's where I kind of got interested in film design. And that's where I guess I started to think that might be a career path. And then when I finished uni, I pursued film design or set design for film and TV.
And did that happen through internships or did you just know people in the industry? got taken on as a freelancer?
Yeah, it was a lot of working for free, and my mum was in advertising, so I did lean a bit on her connections, but you really still have to start from the bottom. I just kind of met her people that she vaguely knew and offered to work for free. And I probably spent a good 18 months doing ad hoc free work or internships at different production companies in Melbourne. And I was just like a runner on a film set, but more in the art department. So sourcing props and cleaning up after film shoots and, you know, just ferrying stuff all around town because there's a lot of schlepping in the film industry. So, yeah, I did that. So I finished uni when I was like, must have been about 21, and did that for about a year and a half, and then really started to get regular kind of contract work or freelance work in the film and TV industry. I don't know. At that time, it wasn't really so much about the output. Like, I didn't really feel that connected to the creative output because I was one of a small cog in a very big machine in those productions, but it was more just the excitement of being part of, you know, the industry. And there's a real collaborative nature to filmmaking, and that part of it really excited me.
And so the first blog post for the Design Files was published in January 2008, 10 years ago. But when and how did the idea to start a blog first come to you?
Yeah, it's so weird, isn't it? 10 years ago, the internet was such a different place. I was, going back to the fact that I'm a nerd, I was reading blogs. So blogs were kind of a big deal back then. There was no Instagram, and I almost feel like the blogging community was almost like a pre-Instagram-like community, if that makes sense. So it was kind of just after, I don't know, MySpace and LiveJournal, sort of, but before Instagram. And if you had a niche, which, you know, I always loved design and interiors and that sort of stuff, I think there was really rich communities around certain niches in the blogging world. So I was just reading a lot of great American blogs, mainly like Design Sponge and Oh Joy and Apartment Therapy and all these others. And I don't know, they were just really inspiring, and it was very small. All the blogs seemed really indie, and I really connected with them. And I just felt that there was nothing like that in Australia, and that there could be or there should be. And so I kind of just started it, and I was like the Aussie version of any of those sites. And yeah, it was really just a side project because I was freelancing, and a lot of creative freelancers have got side projects because you kind of often crave something to fill the gaps between paid work and kind of do something that's
your own.
Yeah, exactly. Do your own kind of creative thing that you can kind of drive yourself. So yeah, I think it wasn't strategic at all, and it was a very just random side project that kind of grew a lot along the way. Yeah.
Do you remember what your first post was about?
It was like a really nothing post about a lamp or lighting designer that I really liked. It had like one little crappy photo of this lamp and just like literally one paragraph of like, I love that, this lamp.
A snap that you'd taken yourself, because I know you started out doing the photography as well.
Yeah, I didn't actually take that. That was like a photo that it was just sourced from the internet. So this is like really bad blogging, like nothing original about it. But no, it wasn't even my photo. It was just like an internet photo. And I was like, I love this lamp so much. What do you think, guys? Kind of vibe, you know?
5!
Yeah.
Oh, great. And so what were your days like back then? Because you were freelancing during the day, and then were you writing the posts after hours, or how did it look?
Yeah, there was a time when it was got a bit crazy. The one thing I did always do was I kind of made this commitment up front to always have a new piece of content or a new story every weekday, which is kind of quite a lot, felt like a lot for a side project that, you know, at that time. So I was writing a lot at nighttime. So I'd work all day and film there. It's quite long hours. You often start really early and stuff like that. And then, yeah, I'd write all night and often on the weekends. That was manageable. It was more so when it started to become a bit known that keeping up with emails and requests and submissions is more of a challenge, as you know, in your role. The writing is kind of like, if I could just sit in a blank room and write, that's kind of easy. That's just me and my time, and that's manageable. But it's maintaining a business or a dialogue, I guess, with the outside world that ended up being a bit too much to manage after a certain amount of time.
So for a lot of people with time constraints, passion projects like that kind of fall by the wayside. How did you stay kind of fixated on this and motivated to keep it going?
Yeah, that's a funny question. A lot of people have asked me that about how did you, or even how do you still stay motivated? And I'm like, God, it's really hard to answer that question because I think it's just my personality, I'm very, like, when I set my mind to something, when I say I'm going to do something, I kind of get a bit, almost a bit stubborn about it. And it's more just like proving to myself or just proving to people that I can do it. And I just can't explain why I never dropped off. I just was really committed to it. It got quite a bit of traction early on. So it was, you know, within the first 6 months, it was starting to get a fair bit of readership. And that in itself is a motivator. Like when you have a little audience, you know, anyone with a bit of an Instagram following would know, you kind of feel compelled. You can always feel that audience kind of just over your shoulder and you feel compelled to keep talking to them. So I guess I felt inspired and motivated by the audience that was growing and a little bit of kind of support I was getting here and there on other blogs or in the media in the first year or two. But I think I really was craving that personal creative outlet and having a platform and a voice of my own, because I felt very much like a tiny minion in the creative work I was doing in film. And I felt like, I think I was really just, I was fueled by this thing of having my own project. And so motivation was never a challenge. It was time, finding the time, that was more of a challenge and still is.
Yeah, I think you're one of those lucky people that can get by on, maybe you do say you need more sleep, but yeah, you were able to kind of work a lot longer hours than.
Yeah, I think I am. You are also like that.
We align on our late night.
We do. We
working
do.
Skills. So you've again demonstrated your multitasking mastery. Now that you're a working mum, with Minnie being 2 3/4, she's nearly 3.
Yeah.
So how have you managed this new addition to your life and work at the same time?
Yeah. So having a kid was like a big deal in my mind for many years. Like, so I had Minnie when I was like 36 or something. Now I'm 38 and, oh no, maybe I was 35. Anyway, something, 35, 36, I had her. And I was really nervous about having a kid for like 5 years. Like I turned 30. Like most women that turn 30, if they want to have a family, that it's on their mind and you're thinking, how am I going to do it? How will I, you know, get maternity leave, or how will I make it work financially? All these stresses you have when you kind of feel like you want to have a kid, but you don't know how it's going to work. And so I was really anxious about it. Like you could ask Lisa Marie Corso, who was working for me at the time, but she kind of knew that I just didn't know how it was going to work. And so I really worried about it, but it was actually the best thing for my business, because it forced me to crew up and to be a bit more structured. And until that point, the design files had been super kind of unstructured. I had tiny staff, like 2.5 people working for me. And I just was always scared to take a leap and to really invest in more people or more resources. And as soon as I knew that was going to happen, I like had 9 months just get my crap sorted. Do you know what I mean? Like I just couldn't, like I was working. I mean, I know I work a lot now, as do you and as does everyone in our team, but like I was just working till I was writing till 1 and 2 a.m. every single night, like, and fully writing, like not even just reviewing stuff. Like it was quite intense. So it was great because it forced me to just go, this has to change. So it was really good. So I hired a couple more people and grew the team a bit and just got a bit more organized, and it really was great. And then when Minnie arrived, I didn't take a traditional maternity leave. I took 12 weeks off, but I was still working from home on my laptop. And then when she was about 12 weeks old, I started coming to work part-time, and my husband works for himself too. So we both juggled this thing and were very much 50-50 in how we took time off. And I had a lot of support from my mom and still do, and a lot of support from the team. And I just don't feel like I've never felt that Minnie's just been my responsibility solely. I've always felt that it's equally shared amongst me and Gordy, and I just feel so supported, and I just couldn't do it if I didn't have the best team and the best mum and the best husband.
Yeah, you've got all three.
The trifecta.
So yeah, Gordy, your husband, and your mum, Chrissy Fagans, have totally been a huge part of the TDF success story, really. Aside from being your supports through parenting, they're both quite involved in the different things that we do here, right? Like,
yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, Gordy never signed up for this. He's just, you know, he's just committed.
He's very agreeable.
Yeah, he is. He knows there's no other option. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it probably is just a reflection of the way I run my business. Like I'm so, as you know, like I'm so personally invested in this business. I cannot extricate me and the design files. There is no line between the business and me as a person. Like I just feel that I'm so personally invested in the design files, and the design files is so wrapped up in me as a person. And so it kind of seems logical to me that when something needs doing in my business, that is just, okay, what resources do I have available to me? Mom, can you just pick this up for me or pick up my kid or whatever? And Gordy, sorry, I forgot to tell you, but we're doing this thing tomorrow and I need you to make me a cork board and paint a wall for me. And, you know, it's
like move in an entire interior of a house in a couple of days.
Yeah.
For open house.
Bump in an open house or paint a gallery or install an artwork or whatever it is, or fix something that's been broken or something. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of don't think of it as unusual. Like people say, oh, it's so amazing that Gordia does all that stuff for you. And I really do appreciate it and whatever, what mum, you know, contributes as well. But I don't think it's weird. I think that's normal. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's the same when
it's
you
maybe
like
what you've always known.
Yeah. Or like, what about like you, like, I don't know, coming from a country town or if you come from a big family or certain different cultures are like this too. It's like, surely there's a bit of a village approach in a lot of, you know, communities where everyone just mucks in and gets stuff done.
So. Yeah. You kind of reach out and then everyone's invested and pulls it off and celebrates together.
Yeah. And everyone does feel a bit like proud of their part of the achievement or something. I don't know. I just never feel like on my own with anything we do. I always feel like I know someone who can help us with that, or, you know, I don't know. So I do feel really lucky, but it's definitely a team effort.
Yeah. And I think it's also a testament to how you've built the brand and always been really authentically Lucy in it, that when you do reach out to people, they don't feel like it's a networking, I don't know, undercurrent, or that you're just wanting something. It's like a collaboration, and it's always twofold, which I feel like helps me even when I'm having to cold email people.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, that is true. Like I think with what we've built now with the design files, you're right. Like when you email someone, 9 times out of 10, you know, they want to be part of what you're doing. And it's usually really, people are usually really responsive because, I guess we do have a good reputation and we do good things and we do support people and we try and be generous with what we do. So hopefully, that's like a little good karma that we put into the world.
Interesting what you said before about how it's kind of always just been your nature to say you're going to do something and then doing it. And I can kind of see that in over the 2 years I've been working with you, how I've got to know your mum a little bit too. I think maybe that comes as common nature to you because Chrissy Fagans is such an inspirational, outstanding lady. I mean, she's currently doing an internship for floristry and she just has such wide knowledge and she's always there to help us with our events and things like that.
Yeah.
Has she been a big mentor to you in even in your business, although she hasn't worked in the same industry?
Definitely. I mean, I would say my mum is my number one inspiration in life, both as a mum and just a person, and creatively. So my mum worked in advertising for many years. She was a creative director, and before that she was a copywriter. So I guess we have a lot of similarities in that way. We both come from a writing background and a creative kind of background. But really, my mum's early career in advertising was like the time of Mad Men. Like literally, that was it. It was a really dominant, like man kind of dominated industry. And to rise up and become a creative director as a woman in that industry at that time was pretty major. And my mum, she really inspired me. Also, she worked all through me being a kid. And I think just being a kid and seeing mum going to work and seeing how committed she was to work as well as to us as a family, was that just imprints on you as a child. It wasn't something I noticed. It was just like, mum's late because she's at work, and it wasn't even a question. And I think that was really formative for me and made me just not question the fact that I would have a career and that I would be really career focused. And I hope I can pass that on to Minnie too, even though I'm always busy and she's always like, you know, being told that mum's at work. I actually think that's a good thing for a little girl to know that and see that, and for her to come to our work and see our gallery shows and see that.
The office, as she calls it.
Yeah.
Like the TV show.
She does call it the office, and she calls you guys my friends. Like when we rock up here, she's like, are your friends here? I'm like, yes, they are.
We're here.
But mum has been so formative in so many ways and so supportive. And when I was in high school, she's just that mum that I would literally say some random thing to, like, mum, I want to study shoemaking. This is a true story.
Which happened.
And she was like most mums would be like, I don't know where you're going to do that, or when are you going to find the time, or there's nowhere in Melbourne to do that. And at the time there wasn't actually anywhere in Melbourne to do that. And she Googled it and found out that you could study shoemaking with this like little old man in Pascoe Vale. This is when we lived in Brighton. And she like teed up these classes for me at this tiny little place with this old guy who was actually more like an old ex-Navy shoemaker, like a cobbler kind of guy, like a really not a fashion thing at all, like a really kind of
old school craftsman.
Yeah. And I just went out there and saw him at his little factory in Pasco Vale. I did it for like a year and a half, just like once a week. And I'm just like, what kind of mum figures this out? You know, like, I don't know. I just felt that nothing was impossible. I felt like my mum was always just like, yep, we'll work it out. We'll find out how to do that. No problem. So I think that is an amazing kind of mindset to be brought up with.
Definitely. Have there been some other key mentors along the way and other role models?
Yes. I have looked up to a few international bloggers. I've always looked up to Grace Bonney from Design Sponge, who has an enormous following and an enormous design blog. And I would like not really compare the Design Files to Design Sponge because her website is huge. But I guess in our own little way, we are something similar in the Australian context. So I've always looked up to her, and really the most inspiring thing about Grace, I think, has been that she's managed to maintain a really independent voice despite growth and all the changes to publishing and online publishing. So I feel like she's kept true to her values, and that I find really inspiring. More recently, I and we all in the office have been looking at Man Repeller. So I really look up to Leandra Medine, who is similar, like has built this blog that started as a personal blog and has turned into an absolute juggernaut, and is really, I would say now in America, a contender against big publications like Vogue because of the incredible influential following that she's built for Man Repeller. So I am really in awe of what she's done with that brand, and again has been able to kind of maintain her voice and an independent spirit despite it being very commercial now too.
And she's just had twins and it hasn't dropped off. It just keeps going.
I think I have a dream to meet her. If I ever get to meet her, I won't just fangirl out. But I have to think of something intelligent and funny and witty to say, but she's really inspiring to me. And it's
You did well when you met Megan of recently.
Did I? I don't know if that's true. Anyway, so those guys I really admire, although they're not mentors because I don't really know them, although I have met Grace Bonney. Locally, though, I do have a mentor that I really admire, and that's Jeremy Wartzman, who you know, who's from the Jackie Winter Group, and his is a very different business to ours, but he is another really inspiring creative business person that offers me advice from time to time that I really, really value.
So, Lucy, did you always have a vision for what TDF would and could be, or is it something that just kept evolving over and over, like from a small chronological one post a day blog, all in your voice, to having different writers and different arms now in terms of film, activations, pop-up events, a gallery?
Yeah. To be honest, I never really envisaged where we would be now. I never saw exactly what we're doing now and all those things you mentioned, like particularly the event side of what we do. I don't think 10 years ago I ever imagined that this could be our business or my business, but I tend to do more short-term kind of goal setting. So 1 to 2 years out, like at the end of any given year, I kind of get a sense for what we might be doing next year or the year after. But I can't think, I mean, in 10 years, the internet has changed so much. Like when I started this site, Instagram didn't exist. Instagram has changed so many creative businesses, including this one. Social media was just nothing 10 years ago. And I couldn't have visualized what we are now, even if I'd tried back then. There was just no precedent for running a blog and it being a profitable business thing and doing all the various weird influencer activation-y stuff that we do now. It just wouldn't have entered my mind. So I plan kind of 12 months out, but as you know, it's pretty fluid. There's a lot that changes, and you have to be nimble and you actually have to be flexible. And I don't think if we had a really rigid plan, like particularly not a 5 or 10 year plan, I actually don't think it would be possible to adhere to it, because a big part of what we do is responding to what our readers want, what our advertisers want, and being free enough to be nimble and pivot as well along that journey. So yeah, I'm pretty bad at long-term planning, to be honest.
No, I mean, it as you've explained, it has its merits. Like, it means that we can adapt in ways that really help us. And so a big part of adding all these new parts to what TDF is, aside from just publishing a story a day, you've dramatically scaled up your team. So these days, TDF is a team of 6 full-time staff, 3 part-timers, and more than 20 contributing writers and photographers.
I have never actually counted. That does sound quite big, yes.
I count sometimes when I'm emailing them or preparing a Christmas party list,
yep,
for example.
Important, yep.
So how have you found transitioning from a solo startup to liaising a team of people and embodying the role of boss?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I think like the team is truly the most valuable aspect to the design files. Like, I just value you guys so much, and I truly think we have the most incredible talented team, and it kind of is our strength is our team. You know, like, we get so much done. Like, I think we really punch above our weight for, you know, most days in the office there's 6 or 7 people, and I just feel like, God, we get so much done for a small team. So I'm so in awe of what we do as a team. But yeah, having a team has brought with it challenges that I actually haven't faced before. Like, it's really one thing to run a business and just get the work done. And then when you start to grow a team beyond about 2 or 3 people, then I've kind of learned the kind of long way that, you know, you need to consider systems and structures to keep everyone not just organized, but motivated and happy and feeling inspired and fulfilled and getting along with one another. And, you know, our business isn't big enough to have an HR person. That comes down to me and to all of us. So I am very conscious of that. And I'm conscious of the responsibility of having an amazing bunch of people working here whose incomes are reliant on this business and whose happiness is to some extent really intertwined with this business. So I take that responsibility very seriously. And I'm very, again, personally connected to everything. And I probably should remove myself a little more, but I just want to be everyone's friend. I want everyone to like me. I find it hard to be too kind of removed and businesslike, I guess. So that's sometimes to my strength, sometimes to my detriment. I have to say that has been a challenge in recent years because it's somewhat new. Like, for a long time, for more than 5 years, Design Files was like 2-3 people. And it's only in the last 3 to 4 years that it's been a bigger crew and a bigger bunch of freelancers. So I think that's the strengths that I'm still learning now that I possibly haven't mastered so much as the really basic, you know, running a business stuff.
And I think that's something that's come up in all of the many of the TDF Talks episodes, like, a growing pains tends to be the chief challenge of small businesses.
Totally. And the other thing everyone says is, you know, that thing of choosing to remain small. Like, Rachel Castle said that a lot of people say that they have been in big businesses and in small businesses, and they've been very careful to ensure that their business stays at a manageable size so that they can, I guess, limit those challenges. Yeah.
So to that point, has anything in particular driven your scaling up?
I think hiring people actually drives you, because you have to make more money when you hire more people. So actually that's been a good thing. Like, you know, 1 year ago, just over 1 year ago, we hired Alice and Ashley, so our graphic designer and styling assistant and our partnerships manager. And that was a leap financially for the business, but it's pushed us to do so much more and to be really seeking out and valuing what we do at a certain level. And seeking out projects that we didn't used to do so much of, like running events and things like that. So I think with every risk you take or leap that you make, it pushes you to do more and do better. So I guess if I look back, there are key things along the last 5 years especially that have driven growth. So one is getting pregnant and knowing how to scale up. Two is, like, with every new person I've hired, we've had to just basically increase our workload to make that work. And then, you know, I do get a bit competitive sometimes. I see what other people are doing and I'm like, damn it, we should have got that job, or we should do an event like that, or we'd be great at that. So sometimes that's a good motivator to just go. That pushes me to see what else is happening in the world, and not just in Australia, to see what's happening globally as well, and go, wouldn't it be great to bring something like that here, or do our version of something like that? So I don't know. I just think when you're a creative person, you just want to invent great new projects and to constantly challenge yourself. And the other thing I've been really keen on is making sure that every year we're doing new stuff. I don't want to have 10 years of doing the same thing every year. You know, if today we were doing what we did 10 years ago, we would not actually be in business. That's so boring. Like, you have to evolve, particularly when your business lives online. So I really value the variety of what we do, and I think all the team does as well, and it keeps us all fresh and inspired. So I really am driven to do more, but also to do new things every year. And so that's just a constant kind of driver.
Now that we're coming to the end of 2018, what kind of new things are popping into your head for 2019?
Yeah, we should really have this chat. Why don't we just have it right now? What we're going to do? What Design Files are doing next year? There are so many things I want to do. There's always more things than we probably can do. But, you know, if I had my way and I had all the money in the world and no constraints, then I would love to have a proper like go at doing an online store or retail offering of some sort, because I really feel that would be an amazing addition to the design files. It seems like a no-brainer, but it just terrifies me because it's very new territory. So I would love to do that. We are constantly asked if we're going to do another open house. And
the last one was very Golden Globes, as Lisa Marie would say.
Yeah, we take it up a notch every time we do it. So now it's gone to the point where it's like, do we have to hire Rod Laver Arena now, guys? I don't know how to take it to another level. So I would like to do another one, but I do, again, want to make sure that we're doing new and different things. So it has to change and grow and be different every time. I don't want to repeat myself or ourselves. So probably an open house, but maybe in some new way. We have some other things in store for next year. I can't say what all of them are, but we do have a lot of exciting events and things next year. I want to keep doing our TDF Collect art exhibitions, which are always really popular and which I love. Just all the things.
So I'm not sure many other people would have had a work appraisal that ends like one that I've had with your boss. Sincerely, might I add, saying that I just want this to be a wonderful place where all you brilliant girls can work and we can all hang out every day and share cool things. You actually said that.
Did I? Yeah. Did you write it down?
Yeah.
Aw.
And so what do you ultimately want TDF to be? And has this changed over the years?
Yes, it's changed over the years. I've changed. 10 years is a long time. I was 28 when I started this site. Now I'm 38. That's a big kind of difference in terms of my personal outlook. So yeah, it's changed. Like when I started it, I just wanted to be inspired and for it to be a hobby. Then a few years in, I decided, okay, if I'm going to quit my job, this needs to pay me. So that was just enough money to pay me was an initial goal. And then now I kind of have broader goals where I'm like, I want to be making a difference. I want to make an impact in some way. I want to be seen as really a big part or a central part of Melbourne and Australia's creative kind of culture or something. Like I want to be like, I don't want to just be a business. I want to be contributing something that is a bit meaningful and has a bigger impact on creative Australia, if that makes sense. Because like, I don't know, it's not that hard to just make money. Like this website could be a lot more profitable if we did a heap more boring stuff. And I don't really want to do that because that isn't inspiring. And the more that I'm running this business, the more I realize that business is one thing, but you've got to want to come to work each day. And if you've got a team, you've got to create something that everyone is invested in for more reason than just being paid at the end of the week. So I think we do have an impact on the people's lives that we feature. Like a lot of the artists and creators we feature have great feedback for us and tell us they've had amazing responses to that, and that's really
the TDF effect. I've heard it called sometimes.
Yeah, and that's really so lovely when we hear that, and it feels like what we're doing does, you know, have an impact. But beyond that, I do kind of want to feel like people will remember the design files, you know, down the track for what we're doing right now and that kind of thing, and to have a bit of an impact culturally. And I would like to keep growing it. I just don't want to do the same thing all the time. So I think there's opportunity for us beyond Melbourne. I really want to look at Sydney and other cities and taking what we do a little bit wider and being a bit more thorough in our coverage of what's happening beyond Melbourne. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the challenge I have to figure out for maybe the next couple of years. But no, I forgot the question.
No, you totally answered
okay,
it.
Okay, good.
Exciting times. And so just one last one, what advice do you have for people wanting to start a blog, website, or have an impact as an influencer?
So the number one thing I would say to anyone that wants to start a blog or be an influencer or just do any creative project is you need to be doing it before you're getting paid to do it. Like, just do it. If you've got a full-time job right now, you can still start a blog. It's such a low barrier to entry. You can do or anything, photography, styling, blogging, writing, whatever your passion is. Like, no one's stopping you from doing that every night after work and every weekend. And that's how I started. And that's how most creative people start. No one's going to pay you on day one, you know? So keep your day job and just get started and put your work out there. And also, there's never been an easier time to get your work seen, to get your work published, to find an audience for what you're doing. So I think it's just about making it over and over and over again and being just putting in the hours. I think quitting your day job is a bit overrated in the early years because actually when you quit your day job, it will really limit your creative output to some degree because you'll be very focused on clients and money as soon as you quit your job. So it's really great to keep a boring job or a casual job. I did. I worked at Spotlight on the weekends for the first few years of my film career. And even when I first started this website as well, I was working at Spotlight on the weekends in retail. So like that was the best thing because I just didn't have to worry. I could make the design files what I wanted it to be. The design files wasn't profitable for the first 2 or 3 years.
There wasn't that pressure to deliver what would you bring in money.
Totally. And also like clients couldn't choose the direction because I was just the boss and I could do whatever I wanted because no one was paying me. And that really sets the agenda for a business and sets the kind of, it enables you to just be freely creative. So yeah, do all that stuff.
It's a good list to start. And I think some solid advice.
Thank you.
So we're going to go to a few questions from an Instagram call out you did. One of our followers would like to know, do you think running TDF has influenced your own style, as in how you choose to style your own home and office? It must be hard being surrounded by so many amazing things all the time.
Yeah, it has, but in weird ways. My own style is actually quite different at home and at the office. I feel like at the office, it's all colourful and fun and a bit free, and a lot of the artists whose work we've exhibited or that we've had at open house, I often try and buy a piece of work from our exhibitions or from our open houses so that I can kind of accumulate a little collection that says something about the last 10 years of the design files. So on our wall behind where we sit at the design files is a big kind of wall of art that is a little bit of a cross-section of those artists. So yeah, running the design files has filled our office with beautiful things. Funnily enough, at home in my personal life, I'm a little bit more pared back. I think it is actually just that thing of separating work and life and having a little bit less visual stimulus at home because I get so much of it at work and in the office, and also having a husband that doesn't want too much zany colour everywhere. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely exposed to a lot of stuff, but I think at home I'm a lot more reserved, and in the office it's just crazy colour and fun.
What has been your biggest challenge with your business to date? And has there ever been a time where you've thought about throwing in the towel?
There's never been a time I've thought of throwing in the towel ever. And every year that goes past, I become even more invested in it than I did at the start because it's grown and I'm responsible for so much more now. I'm responsible to you guys and also to the readers and everyone we work with. So no, I've never thought about that, not even once. Well, one big challenge is cash flow. Meaning, you know, the design file started with no real money. It's just me doing it on my own. And we've never had any investor or investment. So it's always been a cash positive business. So the boring answer to that question is it really does limit your growth when you're always growing very incrementally and you can't just inject a big amount of cash into your business at any time to take a leap. So businesses that grow fast at a certain point tend to have a financial investment that assists with that. And we've never really had that. But the reason for that is that I am so independent and so control freaky, and I don't want an investor or a board of directors telling me how to run this business. So that's the upside of that. But it does sometimes limit what we can do, and all those things that I want to do that I mentioned before have to be done at a slower pace because I don't want to make those compromises. So that's probably our biggest challenge. But I think it also is a little bit of where the magic comes from.
Yeah, definitely. It's a merit too. And last one from, oh no, actually there's two more. What do you see as the three highlights from the past 10 years?
One major highlight was doing our first open house. I think it was in 2011. It nearly killed me. I worked with a partner on that. I worked with Esther Navarro-Orejon of the project agency, who's a PR publicist person who's incredible. And she and I collaborated on the first ever open house. We were so underprepared for how big it would be, how many people would come, how much stock would get sold.
You do have high standards. You're not delivering it.
Yeah, it was crazy. And we just needed twice the amount of staff and probably twice the amount of space. And it was, it really nearly killed. Like, I was so shell-shocked afterwards. It went really well. We had an amazing turnout, but I really underestimated running an event and running the business too. So, but it was a real highlight and it really put us on the map, I think, and elevated what we do and in the way people saw us when we kind of, I guess it was the first time we'd taken the design files offline in a significant way. So that was one highlight. I don't know if I could pinpoint the exact time, but at the moment I am so proud of the team we have. Like I walk in sometimes into the office now, like now that we've got a team of six every day and sometimes seven or eight, depending on casual staff, like there are times you probably notice when I come in the morning and I go, whoa, hey, everyone, big day in the office. And it's like this massive team of six or seven or eight people. And I do honestly look around and go, wow, how did I get this incredible bunch of talented people all in here, all working to this one goal and for this, you know, for something I started. So it's a highlight right now, I think, just with the team that we're working with. I think I've never felt so supported in the business, and I think we just have this dream team, which is not to say we haven't always had incredible staff. Lisa Marie Corso was an absolute star, and I couldn't have built the business to where it is without her. Nat Turnbull used to work for me. Same goes for Nat. She started and really helped transform what we did, especially with shoots. So everyone has had their input along the way. But right now, I really feel like we've got this dream team that I'm so proud of. And so that's kind of a highlight, though hard to kind of pinpoint. Another highlight, I think, as well, was earlier this year, we went to Milan and did this sponsored video series, Milan in Color, sponsored by Dulux. And to be honest, I didn't really think of it as a big deal at the time. I was like, yeah, we can do that. Here's how we're going to do it. And we made a plan and we did it. And I kind of don't think I realized the gravity of it until I got back. And a lot of people, I think, looked at it and thought, wow, the design files is in Milan covering international news.
The biggest furniture fair in the world. Like, it has the most significance for all the trends that follow and everything like that.
Yeah. And I just kind of feel like, again, it was one of those things that I didn't think too much about at the time, but in retrospect, those things elevate your brand. People suddenly start to look at you in a different way when you do big things that involve either travel or a big permanent or built kind of project or something like that. Those are the projects that I think make people stop and reconsider what they thought you were. And I kind of love that. So that in itself spurred a lot more interest in us internationally, and a lot of other brands started giving us travel opportunities after that. And I feel like another one of those turning point moments where we kind of took a leap. So yeah, I'm pretty proud of that project.
We'll be posting the links for these videos in the show notes for the podcast, so you'll be able to have a look exactly what Lucy's talking about. Now we're going to go to some quick questions. Lucy, what is your wake-up time?
I wake up at 7 or 7.30. It's really bad. I need to have a New Year's resolution next year to get up earlier.
But that's directly affected by your bedtime.
Yeah, which is late. But yours is too. I have to say, so I know this is supposed to be the short question part. Elle and I every night work till about midnight because we're texting each other and just asking, have you scheduled this post? Have you scheduled these socials? So I'm not in it alone. But yes, we do have a few late nights.
Yeah, we're night owls and not early risers.
No.
But maybe we'll work on that in 2019.
Yeah.
Your daily beauty regime.
Oh my God.
There's a lot of interest around this.
Really? It's quite minimal. I just wash my face with an Aesop face wash, and I am very committed to one moisturizer, which is a Clarins moisturizer, and I don't use anything else because I feel like, you know, when you just get the right moisturizer and it doesn't make you break out and it's just the perfect amount of moisture, and so it's kind of expensive, but I'm addicted to it. I just have a few key things. I don't like fad stuff. I don't like a million
different products that you have to apply.
What are those things that everyone's now saying you have to put on in addition to moisturizer, like a
primer,
a serum? It's don't give me another thing to buy. So no, I just have a few favorite things and that's it.
Your most visited webpage other than TDF?
I'm currently enjoying reading articles on Medium.
Last thing you purchased online?
I just realized that I have no summer clothes. This happens every year. I don't know. It's summer every year and yet every time summer comes around, I have no clothes. So I just bought two linen shirts from Uniqlo.
And how about for Mini?
Oh, Mini. Yeah, I buy a lot for Mini online. I really like that local brand called Pretty Wild for very cute little floral girly dresses and stuff for Minnie.
Most exciting local maker you've come across recently?
Most exciting local maker. There are so many. Who's a good one? You need to remind me. Someone that we really loved recently.
I think you love Tantry Mustika.
I do love Tantry Mustika, but doesn't feel that new to say that. I love Sean Malak. We just showed an exhibition of his work. He's doing amazing things. But I feel like I need to think of someone incredibly new.
Manapan Furniture.
Yes, Manapan, who we did a great story on. They're an indigenous kind of furniture making collective in East Arnhem Land, I think, who exhibited at Den Fair in Melbourne and, yeah, doing really great stuff, training indigenous people in furniture making, and it's indigenous owned and run. So, yes, great suggestion.
Favorite story / interview from the past 10 years?
Okay, you need to give me like two or three. Can I say three? Is that too many?
You can say three.
Okay. I was really starstruck and loved interviewing Ken Doan for a video that we made a year or two ago for Sheridan. That was like an incredible moment. He's so inspiring and awesome.
In his PJs.
He did wear his PJs. It wasn't weird, I promise. This year I got to interview Donna Hay on the phone. I was pretty starstruck about that. I was trying to keep it together, but she's a bit of an idol, so that was cool. And then I'm really proud of this one video we made last year. No, this year. Yeah, Marianne Nichols, who is an Indigenous weaver who makes incredible baskets and different weavings in Swan Hill. We had never made a video like that before. We traveled a long way to meet her, and she suggested this incredible kind of quite remote spot to shoot this video, and it was really, really magical, and it really took us out of our comfort zone, and I really was grateful for that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. We'll share the links for those ones so you can have a look. Favorite Melbourne eatery or hangout?
Oh, you know the answer, the Builder's Arms. So
it just sounds like you're copying Nick Shelton at this point.
Oh, no, really? Sorry, Nick. Yeah, look, I live in Fitzroy and I do not have much of a social life outside of Fitzroy and Collingwood, unfortunately. So the Builder's Arms is my go-to for just after-work drinks, birthday drinks, just any sort of celebration. It's just easy and great.
And if you can invite three people to join you for a dinner at the Builder's Arms, who would they be and why?
Three people to join me for dinner at the Builder's Arms?
Anyone.
In the whole world.
Past, present.
Okay, I'm going to say I can't choose between Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. I think we'll say Michelle Obama.
Maybe they can.
Can they both come?
Yeah. No. I feel like they'd be cool enough to share a seat, or someone would let them push two seats together so you can have.
I'm sure they would be. I'm sure they'd be accommodated. Okay, so the Obamas,
they're in.
Leandra Medine from Man Repeller, mm-hmm. I think she would be really insightful, but also really hilarious. And who is going to be the last one?
Someone from New Zealand.
Oh, Jacinda Ardern. Yeah, I love Jacinda Ardern. Great suggestion. Multi kind of, you know, international. I love it. Yeah, that sounds like a great dinner.
Sounds like the new NATO or APEC.
It should be.
Lucy 2020. It's not the first time it's come up. Last one. One thing you've never done and would like to do business-wise or otherwise.
I have this dream to go to Uluru. It's been on my bucket list for a while. I was really lucky a couple of years ago to meet Mirka Mora. So sad that she's passed away now. But I interviewed her at her home in Richmond, and she was just mad and brilliant and so funny and so kind of, there really was a magic about her. And one of the things she said to me, she was just carrying on about her history and all the places she'd been and things she'd done. And she mentioned that she went to Uluru. This was many years ago when it probably was a lot less touristy. And she just looked at me and said, "Have you been?" And I was like, "No." And she said, "Oh, you must," as if it was a shock that anyone wouldn't have been. And she just said, "You must go." And she just was describing how it feels, that she just said it had a bewitching kind of feeling about it, and just describing the spirituality and the magic feeling of that place. And I'm not a spiritual person, but she really sold it to me. And I felt like, yeah, you know what? I should go, and I want to go, and I want to kind of understand a bit more about this country, because I'm very much a city-bound person and I probably am not connected to the land in the way that maybe I should seek to be. So Uluru is on my bucket list.
It's out there. I have no doubt it's going to happen.
Thank you, hopefully.
Okay, well, thanks, Lucy. That's a wrap. We can now get out of the storeroom and head back to upstairs to make sure tomorrow's stories are out.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Elle.
You've been listening to TDF Talks, a fortnightly podcast from The Design Files. As always, all the links mentioned today can be found in our show notes at thedesignfiles.net/podcast. Of course, you can also visit our main website, thedesignfiles.net, where we post new stories three times a day featuring Australian design, art, architecture and more. This has been our 20th podcast episode, and it's the final podcast for 2018. Thank you so much for tuning in. We've had such a fantastic response to this podcast. And if you've enjoyed it, we would love you to subscribe and please leave us a little review on iTunes if you can. We'd be so grateful. Also, if you have any suggestions for who you would like to hear from when we return in 2019, please email podcast@thedesignfiles.net. We'd love to hear from you. Season's greetings from our team, and thanks again for listening.